And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
You'll be the best, and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Wow, that was fast, Jordan. I wasn't ready for it.
I've been waiting to prank you in that.
Oh my! I feel like I got drawn into the neutral zone or something with a quick cadence. You went turbo on me, Jordan.
I took the underneath route, Rich. I took the underneath route.
You know, Jordan, I like to start these, especially after a loss, with something light. And I loved one of the comments under your column, The Pile, that was published last night. And everybody should go read that if they haven't already, because it's a wonderful breakdown of a pretty terrible game. But we'll get to that later. But Jason O, a wonderful comment under The Pile, said, "The only time there should be three straight hours of 11 personnel is Jordan and Rich's holiday extravaganza episode." That made me laugh. Jason, I hope you're listening. That comment made me laugh more than any in the 3 years that I've worked at The Athletic. So the context there being that the Rams were 100% in 11 personnel in Sunday's pretty dismal loss. I think that's fair to say, right, Jordan?
Yeah, not a great loss. I think, you know, I know everyone in the NFL says there are no moral victories. I do think that some of the losses certain teams do take can at least not sting quite so much. This one probably stings quite a bit. Obviously, if you guys did not watch it, you probably did something more valuable with your Sunday night. But at the same time, if you did watch it, and we hope you did so you can understand what we're talking about on this podcast, Matthew Stafford turned the ball over twice. One was just an atrocious trying to avoid a potential safety turned interception, turned into points by Tennessee all too easily, just about a play later. And then a pick six a little bit later kind of put them in a deficit early. Tennessee is a ball control team, as you know, Rich. So this is exactly, you know, the Rams sort of just fell into their laps in that way, losing all assertion. You could see the lack of assertion in a lot of their play calling, which we will get to later. That 11 personnel note, I think, is really important. Sean McVay said today, among many other comments — this is Monday early evening that we're recording, "Happy daylight savings time, everybody," she said sarcastically, because it's getting dark at 4:30.
The Arizona native really doesn't like daylight savings.
Who needs it? Who needs it? So Sean McVay said today that mixing up personnel groupings is obviously something they want to do in the future. My sense was he let the game get away from him in terms of trying to figure out what tempo he wanted to go, not really wanting to sub, trying to figure out, they were just basically scrambling to get back into it. And at times, even when they felt that they were kind of back into it, he would do things such as, go for a field goal after an overturned penalty or an overturned touchdown penalty and loss of down, instead of try to pull a sort of assertive, well, this is what we think of that sort of situational, in a go situation on a fourth and four at the goal line, things like that. They just didn't feel quite into it. But to your point, he has said that he wants to continue to mix up some of that personnel. Rams, I made a point in my column, very thin in terms of being able to do that. Darrell Henderson left the game with an ankle injury, came back in. Still will be dealing with some sort of an ankle issue. Those things are finicky, but he's, you know, quote unquote fine, as Sean McVay said. Matthew Stafford rolled up on his ankle, was still in the game late for some sort of garbage time touchdown points and stats and all of that. And Jacob Harris, unfortunately, is the big one here. When we talk about, again, mixing up personnel and things like that, and different types of layers and whatnot. Jacob Harris hurt his MCL and ACL. Not quite sure if it's a full tear. I know I got some questions on that. I do know it's enough to where he will need surgery at some point. They're going to have to rehabilitate the knee a little bit to where the swelling goes down so they can get in there. And that will be season ending. So really unfortunate. The Rams have had some unlucky, I think a little maybe larger than usual share of unlucky, just freak injury incidents happened. And those are going to be big ones. Matthew Stafford's going to practice this week, according to Sean McVay. Von Miller will probably have a similar workload as he had last week. I know we'll get to that, but he's still getting back from that ankle injury he suffered a couple weeks ago. So that's kind of where they're at coming out of that Monday presser.
Yeah. Difficult situations there. I mean, obviously it'd be interesting to see what happens with Von Miller. Matthew Stafford hurt himself on that fourth and one pass play that I guess we'll get to that a little bit more later. But
the one that Sean McVay extrapolated when I asked him how he felt he needed to change or what he needed to do differently specifically, he pulled out that play in particular.
Fourth and one pass play.
A stumble and pass. Not great.
Jordan, gosh, there's a lot to dissect here. I don't think we want to pick apart, too much about this game, but I think there's, maybe we can look at it in terms of what it means, big picture. And generally, I think, is there a reason to panic here? No, I don't think so. I mean, I think you put it really well in your column, and I've seen other people comment on it too. Like, you're not going to extrapolate a whole lot from one game, but these are the kind of games. Like, Tennessee's a playoff caliber team. It's the kind of team they're going to be seeing in the playoffs. Arizona is a playoff caliber team, a division title caliber team, and it's a little bit. I don't want to use the word scary. I don't want to go that far, but some of the Rams' shortcomings in these games, I understand they need to be put in context of a lot of good things that have happened during the course of the season. But when you get to January, you're not going to be playing Detroit and the Giants and the Texans. These are the kind of teams that you're going to be playing, and the execution has to be there. And Jordan, independent of anything else that we might talk about, I wanted to get your thoughts about the offensive line, because there's a lot here to swallow, okay? The Rams, let's just look at the raw numbers, right? The Rams gave up 5 sacks on Sunday night. If I'm looking at this correct, and please correct me if I'm wrong, they had only given up 8 the entire season coming into the game. They gave up 5 in this game. I saw Andrew Whitworth's comments after the game that are included in your column, The Pile, which people can read on the Athletic app and website right now. I thought Andrew's comments, I agreed with part of them. somebody had asked him, I don't know who it was, it doesn't matter, but somebody had asked him, I guess, about the offensive line getting kind of manhandled a little bit. I don't think that's too strong of a word to use in physical play. And he pushed back against that a little bit and said, that he didn't think that was necessarily what it was. I thought he did a very, he was very kind of political in his answer. He was very smart in his answer in saying that there were a couple times when Matthew Stafford held onto the ball a little bit too long, I think is the short way of saying what Andrew Whitworth was saying. And I agree with him 100%. But I also think there were times, and Jordan, you noted one of them in your column, and it's not about picking on any particular lineman, but there were times when the Rams linemen were just getting pushed backwards and pushed into Matthew Stafford, and I don't know how you can see that in any other way. So I guess this is a long-winded question of saying, or of asking, like, what do you think was going on there? Because we've talked almost every week, we almost throw it in as a side note, like, oh gosh, we didn't talk about the Rams offensive line this week because gosh, they were just so solid and there's nothing to say about them. So what was going on there? Is it just Tennessee's got a great pass rush? They've got a couple guys up front who are very dynamic. Was it that? Was it just a bad week? What was going on there in your view of things?
Yeah, I mean, it was a game-changing – it had a game-changing ripple effect on how that unfolded between that and the pressure and the turnovers, I think, were the two defining things of that game. And we're not going to dwell too much on the turnovers. You all saw them. Matthew Stafford has taken care of the ball this year, even when under pressure, even when blitzed at a far higher rate than these guys did, which, again, that's in itself a little bit of an issue. That
right.
But I'll get to why in a second. And, you know, it's taking care of the football. This was just an implosion, honestly. And I think, you know, you see it with very good quarterbacks, with great quarterbacks, you see it. I think that Matthew Stafford has also been really just incredible for them, not just in terms of the way that he's able to expand their offense and what they're able to do with him, but also statistically speaking, you know, they entered the game leading the league in several categories. And it's not like they just played pushover defenses, you know, every single week. They did this despite losing to Arizona. They did this, you know, against the Colts, who are not just going to, you know, roll over for you on defense. And so I think that, you know, this is something where they're, for me personally, I mean, I'm going to have to obviously see. This is just an instant opinion off of the small sample size. I think when we overall look at Matthew Stafford's evaluation, you know, you just don't know what it's going to say yet. I think that's a one-off. I don't think it's a one-off. To me, in his body of work currently, it's a one-off in terms of like just the sort of lack of just awareness as the safety situation was sort of happening. Completely changed the game. Like we said, Tennessee is a ball control team. With or without Derrick Henry, they are a ball control team. They will try to control the ball and the time of possession. They will try to, especially if they get a lead, because you have made mistakes, which is what they, you know, this is, I thought Andrew Witt with that part of it, I thought he said really well. If they can force a perfect scenario for them, which is you making mistakes early, then they will try to just control how the game is going based on those types of things, running the ball with a variety of guys, like all of that stuff, which the Rams defended well, but you're still, you know, the ball is still in their hands, penalties, kept drives alive, things like that. Okay. To your question. I think it was a few things. I think there's a combination between what Andrew was saying and also what the questioner was asking. I think it's both of those things. I do think there were times, I mean, this is what I was talking about with the blitz. Like, they didn't have to blitz. This is what Next Gen says. The Titans only had to blitz Matthew Stafford on 4 of his 53 dropbacks, which is ideal because they wanted more guys in coverage because, hello, the Rams are throwing the ball the shit downfield without, you know, your stereotypical, you know, deep threat guy. They're doing it with a lot of different guys. Okay, moving on. So defenses are wanting to play them with more defenders in the defensive backfield. And so they're not blitzing as much. They're not sending those guys up near the line of scrimmage. But they also were able to pressure the heck out of this line with just 4 or fewer rushers at a 30.6% pressure rate. That's 15 pressures. All 5 sacks came off a 4-man rush. That is tied for the most in any game by any defense this season. And Jeffrey Simmons, interior D lineman, just having a heck of a season, currently leading the NFL in pressures. Aaron Donald is second. He had 6 pressures and 3 sacks in a single half, the first half. And Matthew Stafford was under pressure on 40% of his dropbacks. 8 of 20 times he dropped back, he was under pressure. And he also admitted that on at least 2 of those, 1 a hit and 2 sacks, he was sort of responsible because he was looking for the longer downfield developing concept versus taking the yards in front of him. So I think that it's obviously not good for an offense if a defense can get pressure with just 4 against you, especially as they're trying to contain downfield. You want to make sure that they have to send extra people because, again, that helps your mathematical advantage downfield. There's less people covering more receivers. But they were doing it so effectively. And you did see push and you did see guys getting knocked into each other. were the Rams running the ball well also? Yes. And that's the physical part of the game that Andrew Whitworth was alluding to. Were they, I think, as maybe stout as we've come to expect them to be in pass pro? No. Especially on the interior. And they also were not being helped by their quarterback. So I think it's both of those things. I do not think Matthew did them any favors. That's probably putting it politely. And I don't think that the play calling did them any favors either. I get, you know, and I know, Rich, you and I could go in circles on this until, you know, one of us dies. Like, we could go in circles on this for hours and hours and hours, days and days and days. Like, I don't agree with the stereotypical logic that dictates you always have to pass when you're facing a deficit and you always have to load the pass. I think that if the run is your more efficient option in that moment, you should run the ball. However, I understand why people subscribe to the logic that you pass when you're in a deficit. All right. So on that part, I get it. They were running the ball well, but they kept passing, but they also kept opting between play caller in McVay and quarterback. They kept trying to do too much with too little tools around them in terms of protection, in terms of you know, the ability to let some of those concepts develop. And I do think the underneath options were there for Matthew at times, and he even said that they were, but he wasn't taking them, especially early. Second half, he started to get it together a little bit, and then some calls really didn't go their way, and that was probably really frustrating for them. But in the first half, the game-changing moments that they could not dig out of, first of all, you don't want the game-changing moments in those turnovers, but not being able to dig out of them was a direct correlation between how Stafford handled that pressure and how the line handled the pressure and how effective Tennessee is pressuring quarterbacks right now.
Yeah. You know, Jordan, the turnover, even though the turnovers were deadly, I'm inclined to even write them off in terms of you're going to have mistakes sometimes, right? I mean, even the best quarterbacks, Matthew Stafford is among the best, is going to make some bad decisions with the ball. And he made two pretty bad ones right there. I mean, to do what he did on the goal line there was, it's inexcusable, and there's no way around that. But that's going to happen from time to time. And then he follows that up with a very bad read on the very next play for another interception. Look, it's going to happen. He was getting frustrated. He was getting pressured. Doesn't excuse it, but it's something that's going to happen in the course of a game or what have you. What bothered me more than anything was the play calling. And I'm not even talking about the run, because, like, I know that's become a cliche, but I do want to get into that a little bit later to get a little more specific. But Jordan, I'm looking at it, and you come into the game, you're the Rams, you've been sacked 8 times all season. Your first 4 pass plays of Sunday night's game, you get sacked twice in 4 plays. I think even at that point, early on, first drive, second drive, if you're a play caller, there's got to be a little light bulb that goes on over your head and says, you know what? This is going to be one of those games. We're not quite on it. Our offensive line's not quite on it. Matthew Stafford's not quite on it. This Tennessee pass rush very much is on it, as you said, Jordan, without even needing to bring a blitz the vast majority of the time. And for those like you and you know, many, many thousands of people who were fortunate enough to be at SoFi Stadium probably didn't watch the game broadcast, but Chris Collinsworth was all over this.
Yeah, I was asking you about this during the game.
You weren't the only beat writer, by the way, who was texting me saying, like, what was Chris Collinsworth saying? But he was on this to his credit. I mean, his breakdown was very good of this Rams offense and what was going on. And what he was basically saying, without calling anybody out in particular, was, where are the adjustments here? Why are you continuing to just have Matthew Stafford stand there in the pocket and try to throw the ball down the field when it's abundantly clear, and was abundantly clear from even the first possession, that was going to be a difficult way to move the ball? And he was right. And I also think if you look at the way the Rams played the second half, if you throw out the first half, it still would have been a close game. It's not like they blew away Tennessee in the second half by any means. But It was much closer to what they needed to be doing, mm-hmm. what they should have been doing, moving the pocket, taking what was there. I don't know what Tyler Higbee's targets were, but it seemed like they were throwing the ball to him more or trying to throw the ball more to him in the second half than they were in the first half. I apologize if I'm wrong about that. It's just that's the way my memory is processing it. But where was this? I mean, by the time those adjustments went into effect, you were down 21-3. And as you've astutely pointed out, Jordan, a couple times, you're facing a ball control team who had the game exactly where it wanted it at that point. And I just don't know how you can I don't know. And I'm not saying it's easy. It's got to be extraordinarily difficult to be there on the sideline and try to process that in real time. But I don't know how you can watch that series after series and say, yeah, we're going to keep trying to do the same thing here, and eventually it's going to work out. It was just kind of shocking to me.
I think he in his press conference today, he dropped something that I thought was a little telling, which is kind of what we talk about from time to time, Rich, which was he talked about, you know, making sure you're also gauging like what the defense is doing and what special teams is doing and like being a head coach, essentially. Sure. But I know we talk about this a lot, but it's like if you have too much control over every situation, would that not create a tunnel of sorts for you?
It would for me, yeah.
So, and I don't know this. This is just, once again, we're doing our thing that we do,
yes.
which is assuming we know yeah. what people
Jordan,
are thinking.
Jordan, are you stirring the pot here?
Well, I never do that, Rich. That's your job.
Are you stealing my bit?
But what I like to do is try to put myself in people's shoes and try to figure out what they might be thinking, even sure. if it's wrong, as long as we open with that caveat.
Sure, sure.
And it's okay. You know, I would think that metaphorically speaking, much like some of the offensive concepts that they called yesterday, trying to do too much at one time is not an efficient way of doing things. And I think that there is a capacity here. You see it in these flashes of decisions that they make, the catalyst they introduce into their system on a football level. And in a good way that forces growth, that forces change and development and evolution and things like that, that they try and the ways that they talk about how they come up with design and calls and things like that, that just feels really free, right? It feels really free and right. It feels really instinctual. And to me, if you can marry that with like some really good data, which jury's out on that in terms of some of the fourth down decision making. But to me, if you can marry that with like some really just nuanced in-game situational analysis, and you can do those things, but you can keep that freeness of what it is when you're creating and what it is when you're problem solving, all the stuff I saw at training camp, all of these things where right. it's not always going to look good, but just just trying things and having that sense of possibility. I think that does a lot for someone. I would think that would do a lot for somebody who is in charge of a creation portion of a team. And in creation, I mean, you know, designing a play sheet and a game plan offensively. And so I almost wonder if one could constrain themselves too much because they feel that maybe incorrectly, not sure, I don't know,
right.
That they have to do too much all at once. And I think, though, if you talk about some of these plays and everything and someone being so immersed in football that the play calls and the types of things that they do become a part of their DNA and their fingerprints, you can see it. You can see when he has lost his way.
Right, right. First of all, that was a very good way of putting all that, Jordan. And it's not about.
Well, I've got a candle going. I'm feeling thoughtful.
No, that's very yeah. You that was as opposed to my usual sledgehammer way of making points. You put a lot of nuance in there and explain it in the context of what the Rams are trying to accomplish here. But yeah, it's just. And that's where you say, like, it's got to be difficult. Like, it's easy. I acknowledge it's easy to sit at home or sometimes to even sit in the press box and see what's going on and say, oh, well, you know, should be doing that. But, I mean, that's why you have an entire coaching staff, too. And I don't want to get too granular with it, Jordan, but it kind of makes me wonder about, you know, having even something like having Kevin O'Connell on the field. As opposed to having somebody up in the booth who just a different vantage point sometimes and maybe even being removed a little bit from the situation. And I mean that in a purely physical sense, just you're removed from it. You're far above it. You're not in the chaos of the sideline and you're able to take a little bit wider view of things. Like, I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason for that. Maybe for communication purposes, for the quarterbacks, whatever it may be, that's overall still a better way to do it. But it just seems like and by the way, I don't think we're nitpicking a one-time thing here. These in-game adjustments for all the amazing things that Sean McVay has done during his career. And let's not lose sight of that also. And I'm not losing sight of it.
No, we're this is a very high winning percentage.
Extraordinary.
Human that we're talking about.
Extraordinary. I mean,
nobody's sitting there, you know.
Right.
We're not talking about someone on the hot seat or anything like that. But I think when they're striving for what they're striving for, these conversations are you know, and the other thing is the Rams are having these conversations. They have conversations like this in every phase of their business, in every phase of their team build, in every phase of their coaching. They have these conversations. They nitpick at themselves. And so I think before, you know, we get comments about, you know, we're upsetting people's feelings or whatever. Like, I think, like, you know, that's the fascinating part of what these guys do in building this system and ecosystem that they've built is that they do have these conversations. So continue.
No question about it. No. Yeah. And that's where I don't think, I don't know. It's been some time since I've had a conversation with Sean, but like I don't think he would take offense to this because I think
he would love to have this conversation.
I think he would too. Because I do think that they look at this stuff. I think they look at it very closely and in very much the context that you're talking about, Jordan, is if you want to win a Super Bowl, and that let's be very clear, that is what the Rams want to do. there's only one goal here this year, and that's to win a Super Bowl. And these are the kind of things that you might look at it and say it's nitpicking. You might look at it and say, oh, how can you criticize somebody who's had the success that he's had? Well, these are the things that are going to make the difference. And they know that. And it's not being nitpicky. It's not being, you know, petty. It's looking at the things that are going to make a difference when you get into some of these huge games. It's the stuff that made the difference in the Super Bowl 3 years ago. To be quite narrow with it, very similar things to where it didn't get done. And I think Sean probably carries that with him to this day, some of the things that happened that day in Atlanta. So it's very much in that context of you want to be the best. And it's things that you can say, well, they'll be better next week. And then they will be better next week. But that's not what it's really about. It's about how are you going to respond in these games, in these moments where there is no margin for error. And that's really what the Rams are going to be facing, you know, down the line.
I think it even goes further than that. And this is something that I'm still thinking about it. So if it comes out as incoherent nonsense, you could skip the next 3 minutes.
Don't do it. Don't do it. People.
I don't think that it's – I think – you know how sometimes I tell you, Rich, and this is back when you were editing me, and I still will like helicopter in out of nowhere and just tell you just something about – I just got a feeling in my gut, right? It's just like a little scratching on my gut here. Right. Sorry for the visual, but it's like it's just not – this thing is gnawing at me a little bit, and I'm still trying to figure out what it is. But I tried picking at the thread a little bit, talking to Cooper Kupp and McVay today. It's hard to do that. You're on Zoom. Zoom sucks. Luckily, it's a really great beat where they people are at least patient with my, you know – nutso musings at times, and people are very kind. But something that I've been thinking about is it's not just about a failure to adjust to me. That's the problem. Uh-huh. It's about the fact that the next dominant philosophical systems defensively in the league, which written about in great detail.
Yes.
But not the scheme. The philosophical, like the ethos of the scheme, mm-hmm. it preys on a lack of patience. Mm. It preys on it preys on a coordinator's worst tendencies and inclinations and ingrained systemic we must do these things because that's
rightnesses. Right.
You know, mm-hmm. just made up a word. That's where it goes deeper to me.
Right.
And that's why this is something to look internally about. Like, it's something that I'm not going to tell anyone how to live their life. If it was me, this is something I would be thinking about. Because he saw this. He saw this firsthand. You know, Fangio saw this firsthand Super Bowl. And I think it's easy to say schematically that beat me. That's why. Because schematically, it's a perfect foil for my offense, which that's what that system is. It's a perfect foil for my offense. But teams who don't play that defense, that still play two high shells and get pressure, they are still beating this team.
Right. Which is what was happening yesterday.
And so to me, it's not all the time, and specifically if you want to peel away the little, you know, the layer and look at kind of what's festering there underneath, and festering is a strong word, but like it's something that will have this is important. It feels important. I don't know if it is, but it feels important to me.
I'm going to use the word smoldering.
Smoldering. That's better. Festering sounds gross. smoldering. Smoldering. If you have something that's smoldering like that and you don't pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. It's not the fact that it's like everything I've written about, that the two high shells that rotate, the muddy waters for the quarterback. Matthew Stafford can beat a two high.
Right.
He can beat the heck out of a two high. The Rams are seeing the second most frequency of two high usage because those systems are built to stop the McVay-Shanahan system.
Right.
Like, he's seeing the most and to limit explosive pass plays and pass play rates. They are seeing the second most usage of two high, but they still, entering this game, were manufacturing the highest number of explosive air yards plays in the league.
Right.
So it's not that that's a problem, right?
Right.
It's not that. The pressure was the big difference here, mm-hmm. which we're tying this together in a neat little circle. The pressure that we talked about at the very beginning of this, that was the problem here. But even more than that, and even more than the lack of ability to adjust to what the Titans were doing, is the fact that a plan like that, it requires patience in a way that runs counterintuitive to how people think they need to then move the ball downfield in order to overcome a deficit, in order to overcome such a defense.
Right.
In order to, build a lead, it's going to. It's what we talked about: death by a thousand paper cuts. It's going to try to bait you into doing things that are wrong that you feel are right because that's what people do.
And that's the thing. When you're Sean McVay and when you're Matthew Stafford and you have that confidence in yourself that you think you can do it, it's almost like jiu-jitsu, right? I mean, like, that's what that defense is using against you. It's using your own confidence against you.
It's using your own best qualities against you.
Exactly.
It's using your aggressiveness against you. It's using your assertiveness against you. And they're not playing the Brandon Staley defense. They're not.
Right.
But they're the philosophy. That's what's so important that we're seeing permeate through this league, first of all, and especially was used effectively against the Rams when the Titans played them on Sunday night, is they pulled the ethos of that defense. They use some concepts that are popularized now. Again, the shells, rushing with four, not blitzing, like some of the front concept. Like, fine. Yeah. But they were not playing that defense. They didn't just install something new.
Right.
It's just what they've been doing.
Right.
Sean McVay said it himself. Nothing they did surprised him.
Right.
So they didn't photocopy Brandon Staley's playbook.
Right.
Vic Fangio's playbook. No.
Right.
What they did was they said, here is the literal, like, I've been watching The Good Place. It's like the.
Oh, yes.
The skin the demon wears, right? The little human skin clothing that the demon wears, right? So yes. Here it is. That's the two high shell, and that's some of the stuff you do up front, but that's certainly mostly the two high shell.
Right.
But that's not what really is going to make the difference here. It's pulling the philosophy and the actual ethos of that death by a thousand paper cuts, that baiting somebody into playing their own worst qualities, or excuse me, playing their own best qualities against themselves.
Right, right.
And widening the margin for error in doing so. And that's, to me, the problem. It's yes, you need to learn how to adjust, like, not learn. He's a head coach. Of course he knows how to do this. It's not trying to sound condescending at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
No.
Yeah, I'm just not. But evolve in a way where there's an understanding of it's not just – out scheming somebody, it's not letting them twist you around their finger.
Right, right, right. And that's where I think, yeah, it's not adjustment. First of all, I certainly hope nobody skipped that, because that was as good a
longer
breakdown.
Longer than 3 minutes. Sorry.
Yeah, no,
that.
It was such a good breakdown of what it is. And it's not, you're right, it's not adjustment in terms of like, oh, we need to, you know, bring in a two tight end set and start doing this, blah, blah, blah. No. It's about like recognizing kind of what's going on in a game and saying, okay, this is, you know, this is what we're seeing in front of us. This is what our eyes are telling us in this game. And making that, and maybe adjustments is, I wish I could think of a better word than adjustments, but just sort of seeing the tone of the game or how things are developing in front of you. And I thought they started to do that in the second half. They started to get more. I mean, you look at the first drive that they came out. Tennessee got the ball to start the second half, and the Rams defense forced a punt after a couple first downs. And you saw the Rams went down the field, which led to only an ill-fated fourth and goal decision from the Tennessee 4-yard line, which I guess we can cover in greater detail if we want. But you started to see more of that, where it was kind of like, okay, the Rams, they've taken a step back here, they've taken a breath, and they've been able to see what's going on here. And that was the unfortunate thing, I think, that sort of thing didn't happen a little bit earlier, and whether when that needs to happen, who needs to be there to see that, I don't know. I don't know whose responsibility that is. I don't know how much you put on Matthew Stafford on that. But you're right, Jordan. And the only other thing that I would add is this is the kind of thing that we're talking about. Like, this is what's going to happen when you get into these bigger games. The Rams can out-talent a lot of these teams. They can out-talent San Francisco next Monday. They can out-talent some of these teams that they're going to play the way that they out-talented Houston and New York and Detroit. But when you get to these playoff games, when you've got to play Arizona again, when you've got to play Green Bay, when you've got to play whoever it is they might play in the playoffs, that's when you can't have this happen. So people say, oh, they're going to bounce back next week. I don't have any doubt that they will bounce back next week, but that's not really the point. The point is the bigger picture things that you're talking about here, Jordan, and I thought you made the point perfectly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code The Athletic. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
When we talk about impatience, and I want to specify a couple of things too. We talk about impatience. What I mean is continuing to try to force the ball downfield 30 yards at a time when right. You could, you know, that's the way that this defense flips in a smart offensive philosophy upon itself, because it's built, you know, those types of coverages, especially if you're only pressuring with four successfully, that type of extra help and coverage can help limit those types of plays. I guess if we want to flip this and look on the bright side, like, it's a huge compliment to the Rams that teams are playing them like this, because they're throwing the ball downfield through the air. Hello.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Subtweeting verbally.
Yes.
Man, what a feeling. but to get back on track, like, impatience is, it's also the quarterback too. You know, the play concept can be designed in front of them, but it's also the quarterback choosing not to take those decisions. Those were all of this ties together, because that's exactly what a couple of those sacks came from. Was Matthew choosing to not take an underneath concept. And also, you know, situationally, when you are calling the play, is that the most efficient play call? How many layers do you think you can build in? No, you don't want your quarterback throwing short of the sticks on third down. And Stafford certainly does not do that. He's among the top in the league at throwing past the sticks on third down. But how can you efficiently set up those contours and set up those layers to where, you know, and then also combine that with the decision-making process into where that the glory option is not always being sought after. The hero option is not always being sought after.
Yeah.
And I think that just comes with time. It's kind of the irony to me. I pointed this out on Twitter. It's kind of deeply ironic that, you know, at this point, they need to figure out how to blend better catch and run explosives back into their offense because they are almost too vertical right now.
Right.
Again, caveat, specifically on those situational plays when they are facing an adverse down and distance, and also the type of pressure that Tennessee was bringing. I think against a team that's not doing that effectively with their pressure, I think we're not even maybe having this conversation, but because they found a way to really bother the Rams, this is a conversation they will also have to avoid sort of having a blueprint put up on them. But what I keep going back to is I don't think that the blueprint is as much schematic. I think this offense can beat any type of scheme,
really,
up and down the field, beat them wide, beat them long, whatever. Like, I think they could. It's the fact that teams will play on McVay's patience.
Right.
That's what this game showed me.
Yeah. And to speak to the positive, Jordan, I think you'd much rather be in this position if you're the Rams, where you have to figure it out the other way. You have to figure out how to dial that back a little bit, as opposed to last year where they were trying to figure out how do we.
Yeah, they're like, hey, if we just shout, hey, look over there, and then throw the ball downfield, do we think that'll work? Yeah.
If I'm the Rams, I'd much rather be in the position they are this year and having to figure that out versus where they were a year ago, having to figure that stuff out.
You already know that your two top receivers can catch and run very, very well with the ball. So there's that.
and not to put too fine of a point of it, John Jordan, but I mean, you look at the first play, the Rams' first play of the third quarter. I mean, they roll Matthew Stafford out. He finds Robert Woods on the run. It's a gain of 18. Like, what a great play. It just simple. It wasn't a glory play. It wasn't 40 yards down the field. It was a nice catch and run. They got 18 yards. It got the drive started just the way you would want it to. And they go down and once again kick from the 4 yard line. But it really was the kind of play where you went, okay, this is what they needed. And it was the mindset that they needed in that situation. So
I'm not going to discount Matt Gay's kicking game.
Yes.
Dude has been awesome. 54 yarder. That to me was in that situation. That was the right thing to do.
Right.
That was a 4th and 12, I believe. I think in total tandem and partnership with the previous decision, I liked it less.
Right.
In a vacuum, I really appreciated a really great kick from him.
Right.
Definitely not going to take any of that away. I think he's really found a home here in Los Angeles. Also think that we can't, you know, we really cannot exit this conversation without discussing some of the penalties. More than a couple of them, extremely questionable, if not completely egregious. One thing, Rich, that I will add to, I was confused by, and I think I wondered about is I really liked those end zone stripes, but I almost wondered if that made a difference in terms of like, and then they blew up the play on the Oculus over and over and over again, which the referees did not have a good view. The refs did not have a good view of that play on their little tablets, but they kept playing it up on the Oculus. Like Mike Vrabel was gesturing to it.
Right.
Like he wasn't looking at the tablet. He was gesturing to the screen.
Right. Look at this beautiful 70,000
square foot. Like, look at that view. Tyler Higbee's shoe is the size of a boat. Look at that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So but the stripes, I love those stripes, man. Those were great. But like, I just was like, all of it, I just think.
I hadn't thought of that.
In a different situation, like maybe you don't see enough evidence to overturn.
Yeah.
Albeit he was ready to challenge it. He had the flag in his hand. So it could have really, it still could have gone that way. But I think in that situation, first, if you don't, you know, you could argue that the problem was that it was called a touchdown in the first place. The back judge didn't throw his marker down or his hat down or anything like that.
Right.
You could argue there was just a bunch of bad crap with that.
Right.
And then the Aaron Donald one, completely egregious. Completely egregious. I told someone today, I told someone today, I stand in a grocery line with more force than that.
I don't. It's indefensible. Like I'm sorry. I don't. And I don't cheer for the Rams. But that's if that's going to be the standard for roughing the passer, then I don't know. I don't know what to tell you anymore. It was a terrible call and one that really changed. I mean, I'm not going to say it changed the game, but it certainly changed the Rams' ability to come back at a time when it still seemed feasible. So, yeah, I don't agree with that. The Higbee thing is like, to me, that's a little more, my goodness, what are we doing here? Like,
took so long.
Yeah, we're debating, you know, whether a guy got a sliver of his shoe over a blade of artificial turf, you know, and that's our take. And by the way, I would feel the same way if it was Tennessee who had made that play. I mean, it's just an extraordinary play. Matthew Stafford's best play of the entire game, where he steps up there and kind of threw it sidearm and you know, Higbee tiptoes the back of the end zone, and you know, then we sit and wait for 5 minutes to see if a blade of turf got disturbed in the back of the end zone. It's just like, what are we doing here with some of this stuff? But anyway, you know, that is what it is. You know, the one thing I think we should, before we go, we should talk about the defense a little bit. But I, if you will allow me, Jordan, my 3 minutes.
Yes.
Yes. And because, and I, part of this is regretful, and all of the, if you're not on Twitter, this probably doesn't mean a whole lot to you, but one of my ongoing things has been about the Rams run game and, you know, running versus passing in certain situations. And I understand that at some point it becomes almost like hyperbole, where it starts to get mentioned so often that it's almost loses its effectiveness, and at some point things should probably be clarified a little bit and distilled down. And the one thing that I wanted to make clear is that I'm not saying that the Rams have a overall general problem. If you look at the run pass ratio overall, it's not bad. I mean, you would actually be surprised if you looked at it for a team that throws the ball as much as the Rams do, or a team that's presumed to throw the ball as much as the Rams do, that their split isn't even farther off than it is. My issue is situational in large part. There are times when I think Sean McVay does go away, and Jordan, I think you mentioned it near the top of the episode here, where, you know, down by 10 points, time to throw the ball. Like, I do think he slips into that a little bit at times, but I think that's too general. I want to go, I did some homework here, Jordan, and it's anybody who knew me, who knows me when I was in high school, knows that I never did much homework. So this is something that I'm proud of. The Rams yesterday were in 14 situations where they had 4 yards or less to pick up a first down. So I'm talking about second and four, third and four or less, second and three, third and two, whatever it may be. 14 of those plays, okay? They passed the ball on 11 of them. 11 of 14 plays, when they needed 4 yards or fewer to pick up a first down, they passed. Okay, so you're going to look at that and you might say, all right, maybe you're cherry picking here. Maybe you're cherry picking because they were losing by 10 points. And of course, they're going to throw the ball more. Okay, fine. So let's take it down to 2 yards. Let's take it down to plays in which the Rams needed 2 yards or 1 yard to pick up a first down. There were 6 of those plays against the Tennessee Titans, and they passed on 4 of them when they needed 2 yards or 1 yard. And they had a running back who was averaging 5 yards per carry in Darrell Henderson. I understand there might have been an ankle issue there. Fine. He was still averaging 5 yards per carry. The Rams, last number, because I know there's nothing worse than giving numbers on a podcast. Last number, the Rams had 6 plays that they ran in the Tennessee red zone. All of them were pass plays. Nary a single run in the red zone. And the issue that I have here is not that cost them the game, because I don't think it cost them the game. I think the issues that we've spent the last 45 minutes talking about are the issues that cost them the game. The problem is, it's a trend. And the problem is, when if a dummy like me can see it, then I'll bet you that coaches are going to see it. And I bet you that's going to be the book, and they're going to know. And I even had somebody comment to me on Twitter on that 4th-and-1 play, the one where, you know, Matthew Stafford was stumbling, bumbling, and almost hurt his ankle. Somebody pointed out to me on Twitter, well, did the Titans really have to respect the run there? Did they really think, as odd as it sounds, did they really think the Rams were going to run the ball on 4th-and-1? They probably didn't, because I didn't. And that's the kind of thing where it's just like, what kind, and sorry, not Matthew Stafford, Andrew Whitworth said it in those post-game comments. They were running the ball with authority. And I don't know what kind of message you're sending if you need 3 yards or 2 yards or 1 yard and you're not running the ball. And it's not just a one-time thing. It happens a lot. I have some other numbers here. Maybe I'll tweet them Later on, but
oh no, I feel like you're rolling and you're on a Jordan rant right now.
Well,
so.
I mean, there's red zone numbers. Like I ran the red zone numbers. The percentage of time that they're passing versus the percentage of time that they're running. And the Rams are a decent red zone team. I want to be honest here. I don't want to be like some politician who I'm only giving you numbers that support what I'm saying. The Rams are a pretty good red zone team. I mean, they're top third in the league. I want to say they're about 11th or somewhere around there in terms of red zone touchdowns. So don't get me wrong. They are not a bad red zone team. They're not a great red zone team, but they're not a bad red zone team. But the numbers are pretty interesting when you look at it from year to year with Sean McVay. They are progressively throwing the ball more in the red zone than they did early in his tenure. And I think there was even a thought or a debate. I remember it a couple of years ago, like, wow, they don't run the ball enough in the red zone. Well, they're running it even less now than they did before. They're passing the ball 59% of the time on red zone plays. And that comes from Sharp Football Stats, great website where it's very, very easy to move the numbers there and see some of that stuff. 59% of the time they pass in the red zone, which is sixth most in the league. The league average is 43%. They're at 59%. And that has gone up. They've been even last year, it was 40% last year. At a time when we thought that they were, you know, having some problems there, it was 47% the year before that. So it's just, again, is that the reason they lost the game? No, it's not. It's not the reason they lost the game. I'm not making that argument, and I'm not saying that they need to line up in student body left and student body right, like, you know, USC in the 1970s and run the ball all the time. That's not what I'm saying. But like, you just have to look at some of these situational things and start to look at it. Is this the most effective way to move the ball? And I just don't think it is. And I just, for the Rams' sake, I fear that might kind of catch up with them at some point. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. But it really jumped out at me, Jordan, when you're talking about some of those plays. I mean, first and where is it here? We're talking about that. The reason I got on this rant, Jordan, is we talked about that field goal, and that was the drive. They get it down to the Tennessee 4-yard line. It's first and goal at the 4, and they go pass, and then kick a field goal. Not once did they try to run the ball from the 4-yard line. I don't know. Something doesn't seem right there to me. So
there's, yeah, I'd like to
that's
see
the end of my rant.
I thought it was a good rant. My Thank favorite you, part was when you said you set the baseline extremely low in that you have noticed this. So yeah, certainly other people have as well, right, around the league. So that was probably my favorite part, because I don't think you give yourself enough credit, Rich. But if we start from there, there's only you can only go uphill, I think. So
there you go.
If you set your baseline there, and you're talking about NFL coordinators keying in on these things, I think you're pretty spot on there. But I'm not even playing devil's advocate, it's just questions that popped up into my brain when you were talking, was I wonder how those numbers have increased relative to the league's own increase of pass rate,
right,
in the red zone, but then in other situations. And I also, the Rams, I think there are perhaps factors at play, in the sense that you kind of heard this when our colleague Daniel Popper, he's covers the Chargers, was talking at one point, recapping what Brandon Staley was saying in a press conference when they were talking about going forward on fourth downs. He's basically talking about you're wanting to give the person who you believe is the best player on your offense, mm-hmm, as many opportunities to touch the ball as possible. And so I wonder how much that has to do. That's very modern, efficient football postulation right there, in terms of what sort of those conversations are about, in terms of efficiency and increasing the margin at which you are putting the ball in the hands of someone who you believe has a higher rate, success rate, overall, regardless of situation, to make a play happen. Now, you can't really hold that in your head and then think about this last game and think, oh yeah, it makes sense, because Matthew did not have a good game, especially not in the first half. But I think that overall, that to me, I, again, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'd like to see more balance as well. And in those compounded situations, like I don't think you need to pass every time, for example.
Right.
I like a little balance in that situation. But I would understand an argument for why they would do those types of things based on that line of thinking, and then also the increase in pass rate relative to the league itself. So that would be interesting. That might be my next question, to see what the deal is there, because I think that's a really interesting dialogue to have. It's a really interesting question to ask and conversation to have. I'm still bugging him about fourth down decision making. He actually referenced it in his press conference on Friday that he went for it on fourth down at a higher rate over these last couple of games because he was tired of getting asked about it, which is fine.
it was just such a weird decision, Jordan.
Which is a joke, obviously, but yeah, like no, I just disagree. I mean, there's so many go situations that are just not gone for. So, and that's the other thing too. You can't argue that you want to keep the ball into the hands of your quote unquote best or most efficient playmaker at a higher frequency or the highest possible frequency. You can't make that argument for passing that much against compounded spaces in the red zone.
Right.
You cannot make that argument and have it also be true that you don't go for it on fourth down.
Right. Which is like, that's why that four play sequence there is such a great microcosm, because I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, that's a wonderful point. Why do you want to take the ball out of Matthew Stafford's hands? He's clearly your best option to put the ball in the end zone. That's a great point. But you get down and this, again, let's drill down to one sequence here. You've got first and goal at the four. You are down at that point by 18 points. You're losing 21-3. You need a touchdown, not just for the score, but for your mental, for your team's psyche. You need to get in the end zone to make them feel like they are right back in this thing. And you've got the ball again. I said this for the 10th time. You've got the ball at the 4-yard line, and you pass it three times, and then you kick a 22-yard field goal. That really feels empty. I have to think. I'm not on the sideline, but that's got to feel empty when you look up at the scoreboard and you think, "Wow, we just marched all the way down the field. We just went 84 yards, and all we came away with was this souvenir T-shirt of a 22-yard field goal." I can't imagine that made them feel great about themselves. And that sequence there was just. It was just so odd. Like if you're going to push the accelerator three times and put the ball in Matthew Stafford's hands, you might as well do it a fourth time. Like you might as well say, all right, well, we think the odds are that eventually our best player is going to put the ball in the end zone. So we might as well give him one more shot at it. If you've done it three times, I don't know why you don't do it a fourth time.
What color was the T-shirt?
It was kind of a dingy. It was bone. It was bone. It was a bone T-shirt.
Oh man, yeah. So the Rams
are still. I
wish I could
edit that out to make my comeback very snappy. Like I stuttered for a second before I said.
That's all right. I kind of came out of left field on you with the but it's your beat, so I thought I would just pay homage. Yeah. You guys, the Rams are a really good football team.
Yes.
So there's that. But I think for those of you guys who do love to join us weekly for our podcast, and by the way, I'm going to scroll through my feed here really quickly because I actually met
I saw
three
the picture.
Podcast listeners, and they were the warmest, kindest people, and it was wonderful. But basically, as I'm scrolling, I'll make my previous point, which is that we love that there's a population of sickos such as ourselves who do love to have these conversations, especially in the days of Twitter, where you cannot really encapsulate your thoughts very well. Although I have like 100 tweet thread right now on my timeline that you should check out if you are invested in this type of conversation. I probably should have written in a column. Probably going to get a note from my editor on that one later, but oh well. But I also love, and we love when you guys talk to us about this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so much dialogue to be had about the interesting things this team is doing, even when things don't look great, like they didn't Sunday night. Right. Some of these things are just really fascinating. And at the end of the day, you know, the Rams are 7-2. They're a very good football team. I think they will become a better football team by the time this, you know, we sort of put a pin on all of these conversations that we're having. And I still think that this team is playoff bound. That being said, it's fascinating to have. I mean, and these guys are having these conversations too. Guarantee you this is how they spent their Monday morning. Maybe not psychoanalyzing Sean McVay per se.
Right.
But he is in the room after all. Right. But I guarantee you they spent most of today, they will spend tomorrow troubleshooting all of this.
Yeah. And these are the conversations you want to have. I hope this doesn't sound condescending.
Yeah, you don't want to have the conversation of, all right, who do we think the next head coach is going to
exactly,
be?
Exactly.
Who's on the hot seat? You just don't, this is champagne problems.
Right. You said it pretty, I can guarantee you if we had this Rams podcast in 2016, these are not the conversations that we would be having. it would be like,
be drunk, first of all.
Well, yeah. but ultimately, it's a good thing. It's the standards. I mean, we, Jordan, you and I, we discuss this team as though it's a Super Bowl team. And that's the level of conversation that we're having. And that's the level of critique that we're doing here. And like you said, Jordan, that's the same level of critique that's going on in the Rams building today and tomorrow and all week. I guarantee you, they're not sitting there going, well, we're 7-2. That's pretty good. So, you know, hey guys, let's just take it easy this week. Well, you know, things are going to work themselves out. Like, no. They are not thinking that way. They are thinking, how do we look at this stuff and how do we fix it and how do we make sure that this doesn't happen again? Sorry.
Yeah. We get to do it with zero consequences in the win-loss column.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't it great?
So go us, lucky us. But I wanted to say, I pulled up the
I was just going to throw it back to you with this.
So really great way to meet this family. A dad and his two daughters. Dad is Fred. Hope you guys don't mind me saying your names on this podcast. And if I mispronounce them, I am sorry. Although Fred, I think, is pretty straightforward. And Darian, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce that. Really, really pretty name. I was on an elevator heading to do an interview for this project I'm working on. I was on one of the elevators in the stadium, and I looked behind me because there was a guy dressed as like the Ram Squatch. So it was like a Sasquatch outfit, but it was like had ram horns. And I basically was trying to get a selfie with the Ram Squatch, right? And this family is behind me between myself and the Ram Squatch. So I like look around and then I'm like, oh shit. they saw me turn my camera on.
Right.
Let me pretend nothing happened.
Right. Yeah.
And then I heard my name and I turned around and Darian had called out to me and, I was like maybe 10 feet down in the elevator and I just was like, hey. And she said, we listen to 11 Personnel.
That's awesome.
Oh my God. My heart melted. I just was a damn puddle on the floor. It was so nice. What a warm family. We got a picture. They were so kind, so sweet. You guys, if you're listening, and I hope you are, really that I cannot tell you how much that not only made my day, my entire week. And I just really, really appreciated it. And that's kind of what this is all about, right? Is just making connections with people and being able to not just have these conversations with you, Rich, although I do love doing that very much, but also have people come into these conversations that we have as well. And we love when you guys give us feedback. We love when you comment on the podcast. We love when you send notes. We especially love the inside jokes that you have caught on to.
Yes.
I'm still getting a lot of tart tweets, which I love because sometimes other people are tagged in them and they have no clue what they're about, which is hilarious every single time.
Right.
One can only assume what they think they're about. And we just love it. So, you guys, we're halfway through. We've enjoyed the first half of the season. The Rams are 7-2, and rolling towards San Francisco on Monday night. Be sure to follow myself at Jordan Rodrigue on Twitter. Fellow Rich Hammond at Rich_Hammond. A little pot stirring, little uniform talk. You know, Rich.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the modern throwbacks are coming back on Monday against the 49ers. So they get a chance to redeem themselves. It's funny how I put that on Twitter, and it's like it's good fun when the Rams lose and or when they win, and then when they lose, it's like the uniforms.
It's your fault.
The uniforms don't have anything to do with whether they win or lose. Like, yeah, that's kind of the joke. Anyway, good fun. I love it. It's awesome to go back and forth. Even if we disagree, there's so many people who are so respectful. I wish I had names pulled up, but I love having those you know conversations where we can go back and forth, and you know ultimately we might disagree, but that's fine. That's cool. I love hearing other opinions and hearing your insight because helps me. It helps me see the game in a different way. So Jordan, great job again, of course, this week. I know you'll have a whole great week of coverage. Interested to see what happens with Von Miller, whether or not he is in the game. Of course, there's an extra day of preparation as he tries to get himself back to 100%. So that certainly can't hurt going into that game against the 49ers on Monday night. Of course, it'll be an interesting game. Rams 49ers, always a good series. 49ers.
Play the hat versus the hair.
That's right. So I'm excited to see what you've got coming this week, Jordan, on the Athletic app website. Like you said, thank you to all of our subscribers. And of course, if you've been on the fence, if you've gone through the first 9 games of the season and said, you know what, I'm just not sure, now's the time. Second half of the season, gearing up for the playoffs. There's no better way to cover the Rams than alongside Jordan Rodrigue. So Jordan, if they're not already on board, then they go to theathletic.com/11personnel.
A great discount.
Oh, wait.
See, I rushed you twice.
I didn't get to do my, setup.
I took the under route twice.
People
Rich.
Aren't going to know that it's one of your favorite things.
My favorite thing in the world. A great discount.
I like how we switched it up this week, Jordan.
Yeah, well, we're going to hear about it. I know we are. I'm looking at you. Again, I hope I don't mispronounce your name, but Timmy on Twitter, I'm looking at you because I know you hear that pause, that very, yes, very long pause between the Rich and the how you doing. So I'm looking right forward to hearing your reaction there. You guys, you can subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast. And in doing so, receive my favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount. A great discount every single time you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast. Don't forget to rate, subscribe. This is like the longest closing we may have ever recorded, but whatever, screw it. It's we're limping toward the bye week and we are thrilled about it. We'll catch you guys next week.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.